Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour. Welcome to the show where everybody does know that the paradigm of industrial civilization and the living arrangements we've built on it are crumbling. This show is where we talk about that openly and talk about how we can and must respond resiliently. Tonight I don't have a guest because I want to spend time with you just chatting about who I am and where I intend to take this show. I'll play a couple of songs and we'll have some callers because you might have comments or questions in response to what I've called in announcing tonight's show a fireside chat. Many of you know me from being a guest on Mike Rupert's Lifeboat Hour or from my hosting the show in his absence, but you may not know or may know who I really am and what I'm about. But before we get into the fireside chat, let me remind you of two things. First of all, Progressive Radio Network has decided not to move the day and time of the Lifeboat Hour, so we're going to remain in this time slot on Sunday nights. And I'm very glad about this because it will keep the continuity that Mike established with the show over the years. And secondly, I want to remind you of the online celebration of life for Mike Thursday night, this next Thursday night, May 8th at 9 p.m., for which you must register in order to participate. You can register by going to SYNCCAST, SYNCHCAST.net. SYNCCAST.net. And also, since many of you have asked, there is always an archive of this show the next morning at PRN, so go to PRN.fm, click on Shows, and scroll down. So, throughout the 14 years of our association, Mike Rupert and I shared many similarities in our worldview and spiritual paths. During the last 2 years of his life, he devoted a great deal of time and teaching to talking about his path. Mike's agenda for this show was to expose the truth about our predicament and also offer pieces of his spirituality that might support and inspire his listeners. As I've been sitting with where I want to take the show, one word above all others keeps coming to mind, just one word, and that word is resilience. I will certainly be exposing the truth on this show, but more than anything else, I want to assist people in cultivating resilience in the face of what we're confronting now and will be confronting in the next few years. While I'm convinced that near-term extinction is absolutely in process, I also suspect that there will be some humans who will survive in different places on the planet. What they will have lived through and what they will create going forward is anyone's guess. But I'm certain that anyone who survives will do so not because they had an adequate amount of food or water stored or learned very sophisticated survival skills or had plenty of weapons. Anyone who survives will have done so for one reason and one reason only. They became resilient. So, how does one become resilient? We're going to have a station ID here in just a second, and I will finish my answer to that question. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker. And so how does one become resilient? Well, I believe there are countless ways to become resilient, but for the most part, becoming resilient is a process we engage in that has much more to do with the heart and body than the intellect. Like Mike was, I'm convinced that all of the different collapses we're experiencing and the likelihood of near-term extinction demand that we move beyond the intellect and our lifelong training in separation into the new paradigm of connection and cooperation. the fundamental element of our predicament that we must now embrace and commit to with every cell in our bodies is connection, relationship, and union. If you haven't read Charles Eisenstein's work, especially his latest book, A More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible, I highly recommend that you do, because Charles' work is all about moving from separation to connection. So I want to share a bit about how I arrived at this awareness. As I have said before in this show, I met Mike Rupert in 2000 and woke up to the myriad issues that humans were confronting at that time. The fraudulent Bush election of 2000, imperialism, peak oil, economic meltdown, 9/11, the Iraq War, the tyranny of the Bush administration, and the burgeoning awareness of climate change. In 2006, after working very closely with From the Wilderness, Mike's longtime website, I established my own website, Speaking Truth to Power, and began publishing a daily news digest 7 days a week, and I've continued to do so for 7 years. The Daily News Digest is subscription-based, and the only time I don't publish it is when I'm traveling. For example, I didn't publish last week because I was away. In 2007, I viewed the famous documentary that I know many of you have seen, What a Way to Go, Life at the End of Empire. It's a 2-hour documentary by Tim Bennett that can be watched on YouTube for free these days. And after watching it, I realized that what we're facing is not a plethora of individual problems, but in the larger picture, the collapse of industrial civilization, which has been created by all of these individual problems. When I woke up to collapse, my training as a former psychotherapist caused me to ponder not how I would survive physically or how anyone else would survive physically, but rather how human beings would be impacted emotionally and spiritually by this collapse. So I began to make some notes here and there, and in 2009 I published my first book on collapse, Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse. I began to understand that the demise of industrial civilization was and would be a spiritual milestone for humanity, not merely a historical event. I didn't anticipate that I would sell any books, really, but the success of Sacred Demise inspired me to take that material further and focus on specific emotional and spiritual tools to help us prepare for collapse. And so I wrote Navigating the Coming Chaos, a Handbook for Inner Transition. When that book was published in 2011, the transition movement was becoming increasingly popular, and I wanted to shift the focus from external transition to inner transition. After publishing that book, I was inundated with comments from people who told me that they didn't want to see any more charts and graphs about peak oil or the housing bubble or even climate change, but that they wanted emotional and spiritual tools for the road ahead, and they desperately wanted community. Now, some people have called my work New Age, and whenever I hear that description of my work, I laugh because I realize that the people using the term New Age have absolutely no idea what it means. My work is anything but New Age. Just for the record, New Age teachings emphasize positive thinking and the notion that if we all just think positively and chant Om while holding hands and dancing around the world, everything will be fine. Trust me, folks, there is nothing about my work that is new or New Age. The spiritual path I walk is based on perennial wisdom and the teachings of traditions that are thousands of years old. You can read much more about my emotional and spiritual perspective in my books, Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times, Navigating the Coming Chaos, A Handbook for Inner Transition, and Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse. I've put this wisdom out there, and if people resonate with it, fine. If not, that's fine, too. I'm a firm believer in a famous 12-step slogan, take what you like and leave the rest. I write and speak and teach what I most need to learn and also what I've experienced. None of it is about what I believe, because for me, belief is irrelevant, but experience is everything. And furthermore, everything any of us needs to know is inside of us, and it doesn't come from anyone or anywhere else other than within us. So since I published Sacred Demise and Navigating the Coming Chaos and my newest book, Collapsing Consciously, I've come to understand the reality of near-term extinction. And for me, the two most important questions as I live my life and face the future are, number one, who am I? And number two, how do I want to live in the face of catastrophic climate change? So this brings me to our first song, a favorite of mine from the 80s, one of my favorites of all time, The Logical Song by Supertramp. Let's listen.
Joyfully, oh, playfully, watching me.
please tell me who I am. Logic and reason and Cartesian dualism cannot answer that question. Nor do I pretend that any of us using any tools will find all of the answers in this life, but we can begin the journey. We can wake up not only to the reality of climate change and Fukushima radiation and peak oil, but we can also wake up to the amazing, unrepeatable, unique, precious miracle that each of us is. And we can experience in every cell of the body that we are not separate, but inextricably connected with everyone and everything in the universe. I'm Carolyn Baker, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. We're going to pause for just a second or two for station break. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker, and as many of you know, I use a lot of poetry in my work and also storytelling with an African drum. Both of these help circumvent the left brain and take us into the body and the emotions. And I just recently did a webinar on befriending the dark emotions in turbulent times with syncast.net. In it, I talked about how we can develop emotional resilience by employing specific tools to work consciously with our fear, anger, grief, and despair. And one of the many outcomes of this process is usually that we not only learn to be more emotionally resilient, but we begin to experience a deeper texture and quality of joy in our lives. You know, in addition to the 200 species that are going extinct each day, humans are quite likely in the process of going extinct ourselves. And we're possibly facing the end of most of life on Earth by mid-century and certainly by the beginning of the next century. Sometimes people come to me terrified about this because they've just learned about near-term extinction and they're over the edge emotionally. And I have to remind them, sympathetically, of course, that life is fatal and that we begin to die the moment we are born and that no one gets out of here alive. But life in the universe is all about endings and beginnings. The moment one thing ends, something else begins. So I want to read a poem about this and then play another one of my favorite songs. This poem is by a woman named Rashani, who lives in Hawaii. And I love what her webpage says about her in this one paragraph about the poet. She invites people to befriend the unwanted circumstances and unpredictable conditions of life to discover that which is beyond brokenness and conditioning, to relish the simple miracles in the most ordinary and unexpected places. She shows others how to make nectar out of poison, how to find gold within what has been previously perceived as pain. So here's the poem. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside that is unbreakable and whole while learning to sing. I'm Carolyn Baker with you on the Lifeboat Hour, and this next song is another one of my favorites of all time. And it's not about every cloud has a silver lining, but rather that with every ending, there is a new beginning. And with every beginning comes an end. So I want to play this song and dedicate it to our fallen brother, Michael C. Rupert, for whom I believe mourning has broken.
Broken like the first morning, blackbird has spoken like the first morning. praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for them springing fresh from the world. Sweet the rains new fall, sunlit from heaven, like the first dew fall on the first grass. Praise for the sweetness of the red garden, sprung in completeness where his feet. Mine is the sunlight, mine is the morning, born of the one light, Eden saw play. Praise with elation, praise every morning, God's recreation of the new.
Morning Has Broken, sung by Cat Stevens in the 1970s and written by Eleanor Farzoon in 1931. It was written for children to teach them to give thanks for each new day, and for me, the song becomes more precious with every day that I live on this precious planet. It always opens my heart, usually brings tears, and fills me with deep gratitude for life and every species that I share this planet with. For me, near-term extinction compels me not to take my life or stay stoned, without judgment on anyone who chooses that path, but rather to live every day, every second of my life to the absolute fullest, knowing that I and my species are in hospice. And what really matters now is how I can serve the Earth community, how awake and conscious I can be as I face my demise, how much I can reflect on my life and learn from all my life experiences, whether heavenly or horrifying. Who am I and what is my purpose in these last hours of life on this planet? I want to allow Mike's death to teach me about my own mortality and how desperately urgent it is to face my own extinction consciously and with purpose and love. And by the way, let's have good manners toward all species, including our own. Let's make it easier on all beings to navigate our demise. Francis Weller talked about this again last week when he was on this show, and I believe it's the most important thing we can do in the face of near-term extinction. Even if we weren't facing near-term extinction, even if we weren't facing catastrophic climate change, this is a really good way to live anyway. So now let's have some callers. I want your questions and comments, please. The number to call again is 888-874-4888. You may have some comments, questions, responses to things that I've been saying here, and I would love to hear from you. So please give a call, 888 874-4888. This is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker. And while we're waiting for callers, I would like to just read just a little passage from my book, Collapsing Consciously. You know, this book was written, it had 17 essays at the beginning, and those are all essays that I wrote for CollapseNet over the course of 2010, 11, and 12. And then I wanted not just to have essays in my opinion, but I wanted to have a book of inspiration. And I had always wanted to write a book of like 365 reflections, day-by-day reflections. So I submitted the 17 essays with 365 reflections. And the publisher said, this is great, except it's going to be a very long book, a very expensive book. So how about if you pick out 52 reflections and we'll put those in the hard copy with the 17 essays? Well, it was very difficult to make that decision and pull those reflections. It was kind of like pulling out parts of my body. But I did. And then they decided to take the other 313 reflections. 52 from 365 is 313, last time I checked. And they put those other 313 reflections in an e-book with no essays. So anyway, here's one of the reflections from Collapsing Consciously, and it starts out with a little segment of a poem from Rumi. And Rumi says, this we have now is not imagination. This is not grief or joy, not a judging state or an elation or sadness. Those come and go. This is the presence that doesn't. So here's what I said about that, and while you're listening, consider giving a call. Like to hear your comments or questions, 888-874-4888. So what is this presence of which Rumi speaks? Words sometimes used synonymously with this presence are sacred, spirit, the transcendent. All suggest the nearness of something greater than the rational mind and the human ego. In this excerpt from one of Rumi's longer poems, he assures us that the presence is eternal and never falters and never leaves. Whatever our feeling state, our mental preoccupation, or our physical condition, whether we are aware of the presence or not, it remains. The presence is always with us, even in the current unraveling, and even if we are only sometimes ourselves with the presence. We can consciously connect with the presence through meditation, through intentional engagement with nature, or by allowing ourselves to experience beauty through art, music, poetry, or other forms of creative expression in which we allow beauty to touch and inspire us. We cannot control our experience of presence, but we may ask it to visit us, and we can open to however it manifests. Like the biblical Jacob who, wrestling with the angel, cried out, I will not let go until you bless me, we must be willing to be present with the presence. When we are fully open, we may be astonished by the gift of presence, a gift by which we are infused with gratitude and humility. Will you take time today to be present with presence? All else comes and goes, but the presence does not. So that's one of the many reflections that is in Collapsing Consciously. And these are meant, as I said, to inspire. I believe that right now, as we face all that we are facing, we desperately need joy and inspiration and beauty and humor and deep connection with each other and the Earth community. I would love to hear from you. So please call with a comment or question, 888-874-4888. Mike always told me, if people don't call in, that's because they just want to keep hearing you talk. And I'm willing to keep talking, but I would love to hear from you. You know, one of the things that that I use a lot in my work, because I have found that it's really, really important, and it's the only way I can make sense of what we're experiencing right now, and to move beyond that rational, linear place, I use a lot of paradox. Paradox, where two different things that seem to be in contradiction actually come together. And where both are true in their own way. And sometimes paradox can feel like it's tearing us apart. Like, well, if this is true, then this over here can't be true. But if we can put the two seemingly different perspectives together, we will often find that if we hold that tension, and it does always cause a tension, if we hold that tension long enough, it will transform in some way into a third option. And one of the paradoxes that comes to mind that I run into all the time when I'm giving workshops or sometimes in radio interviews, is the paradox, the contradiction between optimist and pessimist. Oftentimes, I will do a workshop and start talking about catastrophic climate change, and someone will say, well, I'm an optimist. And what I like to do is not argue, because the worst thing you can do with a paradox is argue and debate. That's left-brain thinking, that's Cartesian dualism. It also perpetuates the separation that Charles Eisenstein talks about in his work. So when people start talking about optimism and pessimism, I refer to a book by Margaret Wheatley, W-H-E-A-T-L-E-Y, Margaret Wheatley. She's written a number of books, and in 2010 she wrote this little book called Perseverance. And this is a little short page from her book. All of the pages are short in this book. And it's called Dwelling in Uncertainty. And as I read this, again, I'd be very happy to speak with you if you have a comment or a question. 888-874-4888, Dwelling in Uncertainty. Some people despair about the darkening direction of the world today. Others are excited by the possibilities for creativity and new ways of living that they see emerging out of the darkness. Rather than thinking one perspective is preferable to the other, let's notice that both are somewhat dangerous. Either position, optimism or pessimism, keeps us from fully engaging with the complexity of this time. If we see only troubles or only opportunities, in both cases, we are blinded by our need for certainty, our need to know what's going on, to figure things out so that we can be useful. Certainty is a very effective way of defending ourselves from the irresolvable nature of life. If we're certain, we don't have to immerse ourselves in the strange, puzzling paradoxes that always characterize a time of upheaval. The potential for new beginnings born from the loss of treasured past. The grief of dreams dying with the exhilaration of what now might be. The impotence and rage of failed ideals and the power of new aspirations. the horrors inflicted on so many innocents that call us to greater compassion. The challenge is to refuse to categorize ourselves. We don't have to take sides or define ourselves as either optimists or pessimists. Much better to dwell in uncertainty, hold the paradoxes, live in the complexities and contradictions without needing them to resolve. This is what uncertainty feels like, and it's a very healthy place to dwell. I'm Carolyn Baker, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. It may be a very healthy place to dwell, but it certainly doesn't feel good. How many of us can live with uncertainty for 5 minutes, or 5 hours, or 5 days, or 5 years? The not knowing. And there's so much about our situation, our predicament, that we don't really know. We guess, we speculate, we have our charts and graphs, we have a lot of evidence about what we are going to be confronting based on really hard science and based on what we're already experiencing, but it's all very uncertain. Wouldn't it be wonderful, we think, to be able to know, to be able to control, but we don't. And you know, I was thinking today about what happened 44 years ago today and where I was. Some of you may remember the Kent State Massacre. It was May 4th, 1970, and Nixon had told us that we were winding down the war in Vietnam. And all the while, he and Henry Kissinger were preparing to escalate that war. And so a lot of bombing began around that time of Cambodia. And students all over the country were going bonkers with protests. And so on May the 4th, 1970, pretty much all over the country, students were protesting, trying to shut down universities. There were whole communities that in which people were protesting and trying to shut things down. And I was a student at that time at Michigan State. And a few hundred miles away in Kent, Ohio, at Kent State University, students over the weekend had burned down the ROTC building in protest. And then, the National Guard came in to occupy the campus. And there was a tremendous protest on Monday the 4th. And a number of students were shot and injured, and 4 students were killed. And I remember the impact of that on me and my peers at that time. I remember that in many ways, that was the end of the 60s. And things seemed not to be ever again as they were, as they had been. And so I was thinking about that today and how little we could have imagined at that time what our predicament is today and what we're facing in 2014. Certainty. Our experience, our lives are very, very uncertain. Certainly, nobody expected at this particular time that Mike would leave us. We had some clues, but we didn't have certainty. So, here we are, May 4th, 2014, and I wonder what you're thinking. I wonder what you're feeling. I'd like to read another reflection from Collapsing Consciously. That's about being awake. And I start out with a little quote from Thelma and Louise, one of my favorite movies in the whole world. When Thelma says, "I don't recall ever feeling this awake." And she's sitting there, and they're probably a few hours away from driving off the cliff. It's a beautiful night, sitting there in the desert. And she very quietly, in a very uncharacteristic Thelma moment, very pensively says, "I don't recall ever feeling this awake." Then I follow that with a quote from Buddha. One of his students asked him, "Are you the Messiah?" "No," answered Buddha. "Then are you a healer?" "No," Buddha replied. "Then are you a teacher?" the student persisted. "No, I am not a teacher." "Then what are you?" asked the student, exasperated. "I am awake," Buddha replied. And I ask in the reflection part, is there really any difference between Thelma and Buddha? A man named Siddhartha grows up in the warrior caste of his country and abdicates all privilege, choosing instead to become a monk and commit his life to ending suffering. A law-abiding, subservient woman becomes unintentionally entangled in a maelstrom of crime and finds herself sitting in a car beside her accomplice on a starry night, declaring that she's crossed a line and will never go back to her former life. Both the man Siddhartha and the woman Thelma declare that they are awake. There are as many ways to awaken as there are human beings on the earth, and there's no one right way. Some of us awaken early in our lives, others awaken late, perhaps too late to survive turbulent times. In a chaotic world, we're surrounded by people who are in various stages of awakeness and befuddlement. While it's never too late to awaken, it may be too late to make the changes in our lives and our world that we would have preferred to make. Nevertheless, I would argue that it's better to awaken too late than not at all. We cannot be awake and simply revel in our awakeness. Action is an inevitable result of becoming conscious. If you feel awake, what is your awakeness calling you to? For Thelma, awakeness ultimately called her to death. For Buddha, the call was to end suffering. Take time to contemplate and savor your awakening process. You know, one of the things I sometimes suggest to people is to make a diary or a journal, just to write, you know, on a couple pieces of paper, to trace their journey from when they woke up to collapse and near-term extinction and all of those things to the present time. Take time to contemplate and savor your awakening process. Are you committed to continuing that process? If so, how? And what action has been born from your awakening? What further action might be gestating and waiting to emerge? You know, I really believe that it's important for us to be doing. Not doing in the sense of saving the world, because I don't believe the world can be saved, but in terms of being active to help other species, to alleviate suffering, to demonstrate compassion, to just be kind, as I talked about last week when I read that poem by Naomi Shaib Nye. There's a woman that I want to have on this show at some point. Her name is Ann Amberg, and she is a student of physicist Brian Swim, and I would love to have Brian on this program at some time. But she and I were having a conversation about doing and what is the difference between not doing and giving up. I believe that we need to be doing in the sense of all the things I just said, making it easier for other species, serving, being kind to all of the Earth community, creating beauty and joy wherever we go. But our attempts to save the planet, I believe at this time, are not useful. And my friend Anne says, we must be willing to mature and grow into our place of wholeness as a species, in which we invite the Earth and the universe to inform our identity and to place constraints on our behavior. Wow. We allow the universe to place constraints on our behavior. I believe that is one reason we are where we are today, is we have not allowed the universe to place limits on us. We have not adhered to those limits. We have lived like two-year-olds as if there were no limits. She says, one evolutionary capacity might be learning to embrace what time it is. And then I love this phrase, to partner with loss. The acceptance that we are actually in an extinction phase and rapidly approaching the end point. To help us understand this destruction, we can recall what the cosmos does. The supernova that has been fusing for billions of years suddenly implodes. We don't see it coming. It's hard for us to digest the deep ecological truth that the universe is our referent for what it means to be human, and that technology will not save us, and that, as our friend Guy McPherson says, nature bats last. So these are some thoughts I wanted to share tonight, and I still would love to hear from anyone who might want to call in with a comment or question. 888-874-4888. You know, next Sunday is Mother's Day, and I'm going to have a very special guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but we're going to talk a lot about caring for the mother next week, caring for Mother Earth. And throughout this week, we can perhaps ponder Mother's Day in a different way than we have in the past. Mother as not just our physical, biological mother, but the great mother. The great mother who brought us into this world, the great mother who sustains us, the mother of all mothers on this planet. And so, I sit here and am grateful to you for listening tonight, grateful to you for tuning in with no special guest. I've actually never done this before on one of the Lifeboat Hours. When I've hosted, I've always had a guest. But tonight, it just felt important to me to speak about where I am and where I would like to take this show. Where I would like to take this show is to have a lot of guests talking about various topics in relation to collapse, in relation to near-term extinction, in relation to resilience and creating resilience emotionally, creating resilience logistically, although we have a lot of information about that. Being able to create emotional resilience, discovering the resources that are within us that have been untapped in the past, that we will be required to tap into in times that are particularly stressful and challenging. And so I am excited about this show. I am deeply humbled and honored to have been given this show by Mike. He and I very much on the same page about what needs to happen on this show. And so I would like to thank you again for calling in, for listening tonight, tuning in. And please tell your friends about the Lifeboat Hour. And I would like to share one more poem with you. And this is a poem about fear. You know, I work with a lot of folks who contact me because they've just awakened. They've just awakened to a lot of information, perhaps about near-term extinction or about economic collapse or energy depletion, so on. And, you know, it's particularly difficult when people wake up, and they don't have anyone to talk to about it, or when their partner or family members don't want to hear. And so I do a lot of work with folks who are facing that situation. But I think there is a level of fear that we all carry right now as we face these various challenges. And one of my favorite poems, American poet, who's highly underrated, some people have never even heard of him, William Stafford. Very simple, but very profound poet. He wrote a poem called To My Young Friends Who Are Afraid. And I think on one level, all of us are carrying a lot of fear. And Stafford says, there is a country to cross you will find in the corner of your eye, in the quick slip of your foot, air far down, a snap that might have caught. And maybe for you, for me, a high passing voice that finds its way by being afraid. That finds its way by being afraid. I love that line. That country is there for us, carried as it is crossed. What you fear will not go away. It will take you into yourself and bless you and keep you. That's the world, and we all live there. So take the fear into yourself and learn from it. Become a student of fear. And mostly pay attention to who's being afraid. That would be you. Who is this that's being afraid? And just witness yourself being afraid. I want to invite you to participate in the celebration of life for Mike that is going to happen this Thursday night, May the 8th. It's going to be an online celebration of life, which I will be hosting. And you must register at SYNCCAST, SYNCCAST.net. SYNCCAST is managed by Jennifer Palmer and Chris Kaplan, who did the webinar that I hosted recently. They do incredible webinars on a number of fascinating topics, and they have just been really gracious to me, and they volunteered. I didn't ask them. They came to me and said, we would love to do this celebration of life for Mike. So please join us on Thursday night, and I want to thank all of you for being with us. We're going to say goodnight for now. I'm going to be back with a very special guest next week on Mother's Day. This is Carolyn Baker on the Lifeboat Hour. Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope to see you and hear you again next week. Good night.
The street lights around me in the wall-to-wall prison of my city, flickering dirty